Hi everyone, it's Loretta. Welcome back to An Emo Girl's Guide to the Galaxy. This is a safe space for readers, weebs, emos, and everyone in between. So if you love sarcasm and hate the patriarchy, you've come to the right place. It's a special episode today because we are joined by Kate Dramas, the author of The Curse of Saints.
Yay!
Which was our inaugural new book club pick, and we were obsessed with it. So I will pass the mic over to you so you can introduce yourself and tell us about your new book.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. And I'm so honored to be like the first book club pick. Like, wow. I don't think I realized I was the first.
It's actually a really funny story. I feel like this is a good like segue or like side story. So Loretta and I both get Fairy Loot subscriptions, like the adult Fairy Loot subscription, and she was looking up the book for the month, and she was like, why does this sound familiar? Like, why? This seems like...
Well, I looked it up because they have a spoiler page. Fairy Loot has like a see the book before you get it thing, and you always do that because if I want to skip it.
Yeah.
I do. So I looked it up. I didn't even realize, and I read the summary of the book, and I was like, yeah, this sounds dope. I'm in. And then, like, not even realizing, and then it was so weird because, like, weeks go by, and then Cassie posted when your book released. Cassie is our mutual friend. We actually know each other.
And we shucked oysters together.
I know. And, yeah, she posted about it, but it was the UK cover. And I was like, oh, what's this book? This sounds cool. And then I looked and I was like, I messaged Dev in like all caps, freaking out. And I was like, oh my God, I know our Fairy Loot book author. We went on vacation together. That was so funny. So this is so crazy, but in a good way.
Yeah, and she's like, I actually thought it sounded so good. Look it up. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, we both have this book now. Let's read it. And so we read it together on our Fable Book Club, and we realized that, like, we had started early because we had the book before it, like, technically released in the U.S. And we were like, oops, oh, well, we're halfway through. We just kept reading it because it was so good.
That's amazing. That's amazing. What a small world.
Seriously, the smallest.
But not to go off on the... side story. Weird love that it's like serendipity, like coincidences of
fate.
Yeah, like how cool is that? But passing it back over to Kate to introduce her book and give like the elevator pitch of what The Curse of Saints is all about.
Oh yes. Okay. So The Curse of Saints is an adult romantasy. I would say romantic fantasy. I think it sits like right on that 50-50% line. That is about an elite spy who shows powers that haven't been seen in over 500 years, just as dark magic reappears in her kingdom. And she's rumored to be the second saint who was said to, you know, come back when darkness arises. And she's basically shipped off by her queen to go study her power and figure out, like, what the heck is going on with her. And she's sent with her least favorite person in the whole entire world, her childhood enemy, Will, who's tasked with her protection. And once she gets to this foreign kingdom, all hell breaks loose, and she has to figure out if she's actually the second saint or if there's something darker going on with her power.
Yeah, that I loved everything about this book. I started reading it.
Me too.
And usually what happens is that I, like, surpass Loretta, and she's like, I have to catch up, but she started it first. She's like, oh my gosh, this is the beginning of so good. Like, I love Will. I'm obsessed, emo boy. And I was like, okay, I need to catch up. So then I caught up, and then I, like, kept going, and I was like, oh my God, the plot twist. What's going on? And then she was like, okay, I have to finish it. I have to get going.
We were both screaming at each other via text, like, have you gotten to this part yet?
I always joke, so my agent, and I would say this to her face, so I'm fine about saying it on a podcast, like, her positive feedback is always, like, very understated when she's going through a draft, and then her negative feedback, because, like, obviously, not negative, her constructive feedback is always where she's focusing on. So she's always like, well, if I'm the meanest to you, you'll be fine, like, during your edits. And so the first time she read the plot twist at the end, she emailed me, or she texted me, and she was like, well, that ending didn't suck. So good. Like, thanks. like, oh, that means she loved it. And I remember, like, telling my mom, and my mom was like, is that good news? I was like, no, 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 it's great news.
The ending, now that I'm thinking about it, the ending kind of reminds me of, like, a Marvel cutscene where you're, like, halfway through the credits, and then it, like, fades in, and then something happens and just cuts out, and you're like, wait, what? And you just, like, have to wait. And you're like,
I know.
How are we here? I read the ending, and I was like, Loretta, you need to read this.
The epilogue.
We must discuss it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I...
Catch up!
We had... Our first question is always, like, what was the inspiration for the story? So I feel like going into it, it's, like, a good question because there's so much stuff going, like, that we read and we're like, oh my god, this is so cool. Like, it reminds me of Game of Thrones. Like, it reminds me a little bit of Throne of Glass. Like, there are so many things that I feel like can pull in a lot of different readers, but it's always interesting to see, like, what the author has to say of, like, what inspired them.
Yes. So I actually came up with the concept of the story. I had a dream about a girl calling down lightning to save her friend. And after that, I don't remember how it came into my head, but I had a really specific conversation between who would become Aya and Will. And I wrote both of those things down. I actually went to the mountains with friends, and I was working on, like, a half-written rom-com at the time. And I told them, I, like, legitimately was like, don't let me work on this stupid fantasy idea. Like, I have nothing for it. Like, yeah, I was like, I'm not going to be a fantasy author. even though it was, like, the only thing I was reading, like, you know, 2020, we were all locked in the house. And so I was like, mm-hmm. I think I picked up ACOTAR. No, I had started the new year reading the Red Queen series by Victoria Aveyard. I picked up ACOTAR in the airport. I went through that. I went through Throne of Glass. I read Ember in the Ashes by Sabaa Tahir. Like, I was just devouring yep. fantasy. But I was like, not me. Like, I won't be writing it. And luckily, they didn't listen to me. And we were, like, in the mountains. It was October. You know, it was, like, our first time leaving our homes. And it was spooky season. And I was like, okay, well, it's not really the mood to, like, write a beach read. So I guess I'll sit down and work on this book. Yeah. And then it just kind of kept coming out. I would say one of the really big influences... There are so many influences, honestly. One of the things that really drew me to, like, structuring the world in the way that I did, I really love how Leigh Bardugo builds the Grisha orders in her world. I love that you can kind of, like, relate to an order or, like, pick an order that you belong in and have this sense of belonging. And it's like the court system, right? And fae books, like the different fae courts. So, you know, even or, like, your house, like, all of those different things. So I wanted something that people could, like, really immerse themselves in.
Yeah, that's really cool. For sure. Yeah, I love that none of the characters felt trustworthy. Like, you have that sense of
literally,
like, you have that sense of connection of, like, oh yeah, I wish I had this special power or whatever. And so you're kind of like, oh, what would my affinity be? Like, what would I do? But then at the same time, you're kind of like, ooh, but this person is. I don't know what their motives
are. I literally
like, I
doubted
know.
Each character at different points in the story. I was like, I don't know about you anymore.
I really love unlikable characters. Like, I remember being very firm about making sure that Aya... Like, Aya is not incredibly likable for a very long time. Like, I love her and I root for her, but, like, our girl has some issues. And so I wanted to play with that kind of across the board. You know, like, usually it's the love interest who gets to be, like, brooding and cranky and, like, Will is all of those things, yes. But, like, Aya has her... It's like Grumpy meets Grumpy. Like, it's just, you know...
Absolutely.
There's not a lot of sunshine in the trope. But I love that. Like, I love characters that make me, like... make me cheer for them, but at the same time, I hate that I can, like, see the worst of myself reflected in them sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? And so yeah. I wanted to build that out.
Yeah. I think it comes across really well because the entire time we were reading
sure.
it, we kept going back and forth. Like, oh my god, I can't believe that they did that. The only person I did not do that for, I think, is Will because he's, like, yeah. walking red flags, but I'm like, he's doing it for good reasons, so I'm just gonna forget all about it. Like,
you're toxic, but I support you in being toxic.
You're fictional, so it's okay that you're toxic. It's fine. I also love the sense of, like, all of the characters have, like, different duties that they are responsible for, and it's really interesting to see how they all kind of navigate those duties with the way that they feel. And I think that Aya especially, like, I remember Loretta and I having a conversation of just, like, everybody having that blind faith of, like, oh, well, I have to follow what my queen says. And I'm like, you're not questioning anything, kind of just, like, doing what you're told. Like, should you be doing that? And you see all of those things kind of crumble by the end of the first book. So I'm excited to see where that goes.
Yeah, and, you know, it was interesting. It was a I'm obviously don't want to give away any spoilers for Sins, but it was a very interesting theme to continue to play on. And I think that the one thing I can say is that Sins picks up right where Saints ends. So, like, we're really put right back into kind of where we left. And I think the most exciting thing for me was to realize that, like, Aya doesn't really complete her emotional arc or her healing journey. If anything, everything she's ever known has been stripped away and destroyed. And now she's faced with the wreckage of that. And that was really fun to kind of dig into further for book two.
I'm really excited for book two. Also, the cover, if you haven't seen it, anyone listening, it's so gorgeous. I saw, like, the purple. I was like, oh my God, this is so
nice. I know, I love the purple.
I'm very excited. I love how it turned out.
Loretta, I will let you jump in with questions if you have any.
I was curious. I thought you did a really great job of building, like, the political intricacies between each of the kingdoms. And there's, like, a lot of political stuff happening and, like, creating tension. And I know that if I were to ever write a book, I could never, ever do that. So I guess my question is, like, was that really hard to build up, or how did you go about it?
You know, it was and it wasn't. So first of all, it, like, started pretty one-dimensional, to be honest with you. Like, I remember there being a very specific point where I was like, okay, well, this story is about Aya and Will and, like, you know, their journey together. And then I was like, okay, well, it can't just be about that. Like, obviously there needs to be, like, a bigger plot going on. And so it kind of, like, took on a life of its own. There was a very specific point. So I actually ended up getting, before I, like, got an agent and went on submission and all of that, I got a developmental edit report done off of Readzy, which is, like, a freelance platform where you can, like, hire an editor. And so I paid this editor to look it over and just tear it to shreds. And I got, like, a 20-page document back that documented every single thing that was absolutely horrible about the book, which was the hardest thing I've ever had to read. Like, I remember reading it and just being like,
I can't even imagine.
Total meltdown. Like, I was like, okay, well, there goes all my hopes and dreams. Like, I'm done.
Thank you so much.
This is great feedback.
Yeah, right? I remember specifically talking to a friend of mine, and he was like, well, you're not, like, paying to hear all the things that are, like, you're good at. And I was like, no, that would be great. Like, one thing would be fantastic. Yeah, it was a lot. But it was, I mean, instrumental, and, like, I would not be where I am if Anna had not torn the book apart. But one of the things that was brought up on that was that there needed to be more subplots. And we actually ended up having a problem where I took that advice and just ran with it.
Times a thousand.
There's too many subplots, right? So one of the things my editor and I had to go through, and she's like, you got it. Like, this is a lot of politics. How do we reel it back in? So it was really a journey. Like, at first I was like, I have nothing to say here. And then all of a sudden it just kept building. And for book two, I remember sitting there and being like, this could have been two books on its own. Yeah. So.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Do you know ahead of time, like, what's going to happen? Like, how far, do you know the whole series already?
Do you know how it ends?
Do you have it all plotted out?
I do. I know how it ends. I always like to caveat that because sometimes I surprise myself, but I know, I've always known where it was going. I have a clearer idea.
Will does have a mind of his own.
Yes, they all do. I know how it ends. How we're going to get there remains a mystery to me, especially with kind of some stuff that I did in book two. So, you know, it's always like, I know where I'm going, but it's like the best route to get there. And if there's going to be construction remains to be seen.
I'm so excited.
I know.
Especially because when you read book one, you get, like, bits and pieces of all of the different political players and then, like, bits and pieces of the main characters, but you still don't know everything. So you're kind of questioning what the motives are and, like, what they're actually plotting. And so I like that you have that, like, political intrigue in there, and you're kind of like, well, is Gianna, like, this great queen who's just, like, selfless and wants to keep her people safe? Or, like, is she not like that? Because I still don't know. I'm like, this isn't kind of sketchy.
Yeah. Like, yeah, and I just think it adds so much. Like, I love reading books like that. I love when there's this added, I think it adds so much, it makes the stakes so much higher, mm-hmm. right? Because there's not sure. just a surface level problem. There are many issues. And, it, you know, in this world, a lot of it comes down to, like, greed, obviously, and power, but also, like, faith and different interpretations of faith and what does that look like. And so I think being able to look at that on a large scale, it got a lot bigger than I ever intended it to, and that was really cool.
Yeah.
I think that is a good segue into a good question based off of, like, the world being a lot bigger than you anticipated is, like, how you came up with the world itself. How did you come up with this magic system and, like, the rules of these different countries and like how they their historical backgrounds and how they interact with one another and all of those things.
So many things. I would be not surprised at all if like someone is tailing me because of my Google search history. So it started with, I knew from the beginning that Aya had persuasion power, and I knew that Will was a Sensenos, and then I knew that Tova, because Tova was the third character to come to mind in their interactions when I wrote the first iteration of the first act. I knew that Tova had fire. And so when I started there, I was like, okay, that's random. So like, what else could be in this world? And I started looking at like, how do I organize these powers, you know, like mental and emotional go together. Obviously, if we have fire, we should have the other elements. So I was started like playing on that, looking at different power systems that, you know, and other magic systems that exist across fantasy. So that's really how the magic system started to discover, like started to grow. And then I knew that I wanted it to be really limited. Like I didn't want there to be magic that could just fix everything, because then we wouldn't have a plot. And like, you could just, you know, wave a wand and everything would be set. I think that I'm probably, my editor would say, like, really painstakingly like detailed about that. So I will come up with scenarios that would like never ever happen. I mean, the notes I have on the world building of like, you know, well, what happens if this person does this and then this happens and then they fall ill and then this and like what type of injury can be healed versus not. Like there's just so much that like obviously you can't brain dump into a book, but like that exists. So that was kind of where I went. And then my agent, actually before she was ever my agent, I met her like in a different life, sent me a list of 50 world building questions to answer when I was like, I want to write a fantasy book. Isn't this cool? And she was like, cool, fill that out and see if you still want to at the end of it. And I remember opening it and being like, F no. And then I sat on it for a month, and then I had a winter that I was like really burnt out from my job. And so I took like the month off because I just couldn't work anymore. And I sat on my mom's couch and pulled up the world building questions and was like, why not? And I went through it, and then I just kept going. So if you Google like world building questions, you can find this list of like 50 really great questions. It's fantastic. So I have a whole document, and that started it. And then I just kept building as I was writing.
That's so interesting to me, because I feel like when I think about fantasy writers, I just imagine like a giant whiteboard with like a thread.
I think I have them in my closet. Like I have these massive post-its that actually have the powers on them. And I had to delete a photo on my Instagram because it had a power that I ended up removing from the story. And I was like, oh, I can't post this anymore. But it's literally just like post-its and post-its and post-its.
Yeah, that's what wild. I imagine. I'm just like, okay, this is connected here and this is connected there. So to think about it in like a logical way of like, oh, there's like a structure that you can have, like answer these questions, start at this level and then like break it out here. Like, I think that that's a cool insight to share with like fantasy readers.
You know that gif of It's Always Sunny and he has like the red lines behind him and he's like, ah, that's, yeah.
I think that like, honestly, I think it's a little bit of both. Like it's a little, I don't want to say formulaic, but it, I mean, there is like an art to world building and things you need to know. And then there's also kind of like the chaos side of it where like, you know, it just lives in your brain and kind of runs rampant and you just throw it on a page. But one of the things that I found most surprising was like the smallest details that you don't think matter actually do matter. So like, if you think about the fact, like what do people do for fun based on the territory they live in, and how is that different and why is that different, is such a like minute thing, but it ended up being a huge part of the world building for me, for like just contrasting how out of place Aya feels in Trahir and in Rania, and how she like hates the beach bonfires at first because like, why the hell are people standing on the beach watching the sunset? Like, why? Like, what's the point? Like, she doesn't like people. She doesn't like the brightness. So it's like those little things that you don't really think matter, but that end up making it like so rich and so real.
Absolutely. Yeah. I could feel that too when I was reading it. Like, because, you know, when they switch countries, like it felt so different when I really liked it.
I also really liked that, like you were saying, the richness of it and the world building and like making it true to the territory. Like, everything actually takes place in a very elongated period of time, like as you're reading. And I was like, this actually makes sense. Like, they're not just here for a few days and then everything blows up. Like, they're here for weeks because, you know, they're running a kingdom. People are busy and they go out and like hang out at the pub and like go to dinner and like do normal things. And then by the end, you're like, wait, they were here for like half a year. Like, they've been gone from home. Like, they don't know what's going on.
I agonized over it. Like, I would go in and be like, 8 weeks, delete, delete, delete. 4 weeks, delete, delete, delete. 5 weeks, because, like, there is nothing I hate more than when I'm reading something and I'm like, there's no way all of this shit took place in 3 weeks. Like, there's just no way. So I use time jumps. I know it bothers some people, and, like, that's fine. You can be bothered by it. But I am much more like, listen, I'd rather say 2 weeks have passed. I don't need you to know what happened. They went to dinner. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But I need you to know that 2 weeks have passed, so there's some progression here.
Random side note, we were talking about, because I saw a TikTok on this, we were talking about how in Twilight, like, the span of four books is actually, like, what, a year? Like,
two years,
like, it's such a short amount of time, and we're like, what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's across, like, a lot of books, and, like, it makes sense on some ways just in how you're writing, but, like, I'm constantly surprised by how I don't understand timelines. Like, I will read a book and I'll be like, great, that took place over a decade. And they're like, no, it took place over 2 days. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Or vice versa, where I'm like, man, like, you know, that took forever. And it's like, no, it didn't. It was like a reasonable week. I was just reading, speaking of that, I'm obsessed with Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuiston. Like, obsessed.
I just read that.
Oh,
it was so good.
Forever. So good. But I would not read, never mind, it's going to be a spoiler, The Lake House. I wouldn't finish my reread because I didn't want to be broken. And then I was like, this literally, like, it's a week of pain and that's it. And it's like two pages and it makes sense logically. But in my head, I was like, this was months of agony, like October, November, December. And I was like, I can't handle it. Yeah, so timelines, I really have to be like a stickler on timelines, and then I have to tag them and make my editor and the copy editor and the proofreader be like, is this math thing? Like, I don't do math.
Yeah. Please tell me.
I'm honestly the same way, and I don't realize it until things start happening, and then I have to go back and I'm like, wait, like, how did they get here? Like, where were we? It's like, what season are we in? Like, what's going on? And then I realize that I don't actually know, like, how long it's been.
I think you're the one. I was reading it and I'm so like, I want things to be spread out, but books have programmed me to just like expect things to happen.
It's been a day.
Accelerated. Yeah, it's been 1 week and we're married and in love and I don't know. But but I think Dev was like, yeah, it's been a long time since they've been in this, you know, since they've been in the new country or whatever. And I was like, it has? And I had to go back and look. And I was like, oh my God, it has. That's nice.
Yeah. Well, I realized we passed Aya's birthday without even, like, we just skip right over it. You don't get it. Like, she doesn't celebrate it. It'll come up later. But, like, I was like, oh, man. She spent so much time. Yeah, it's okay.
One question that I think we skipped over it when we were talking about all the characters being unlikable, but going back to that, if you had to pick one of the characters as your favorite, of like, this is, you'd be heartbroken if anything happened to them, like, who would be your character? Who is your favorite?
Oh man, that's like asking me who my favorite child is. Like, I honestly can't. Yeah, I like honestly can't choose. I mean, obviously I love Aya. I love Aya. I think it's interesting. I have favored characters for different moments. So there are times that I'm like, Aya and I are on the same wavelength. and I'm flying through her point of view. There are times where, like, I kind of want to punch her, and I'm like, I don't understand why you're so difficult. I think that Will is the easiest character for me to write, because even though he's, like, he often masks his true intentions, he doesn't mask his emotions very well. And so that's something I relate to really well. Like, I live in my emotions. He literally has the power to feel and manipulate emotion. And then Aiden is just a ton of fun. And, like, I love exploring his relationship with his family. He has such a strong sense of duty. And then, like, you know, I got to dive into Josie's point of view and Sin's, which is really exciting, and her point
of view.
I love
Josie.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know, and Tova's loosely inspired by my best friend, so she technically has to be my favorite. So, yeah, so it's really hard for me to choose, which I know is such a cop-out answer, but I can't.
It's okay. I will choose for all of us and say that it's Will, because he's a favorite.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
Like, all of his little moments where he's just like, please leave me alone. And I'm like, no, don't tell me.
Don't.
Loretta and I went back and forth. Also, I guess this is just like a PSA that there is like a slight ish love triangle, if you care about that. But Loretta and I would constantly go back and forth, be like, oh no, Aiden's back. Like, this is weird. Like, we're so team Will that it was just like so.
I messaged Deb and I was like, I'm on literally like the first sentence of Will's chapter. I was like, oh, I love you.
Isn't that about how he's, like, not going to get through the day without murdering someone?
Yeah.
He gets the first thought out of his head.
That's what I need, I guess. I don't know.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah, he's a good one.
Also, I just want to call out, I know I mentioned it slightly in the beginning, but there are so many plot twists in this one book. And usually, Loretta can attest, like, I'm usually that reader who's like, ooh, something's up. Like, I called it. And, like, I'm so invested.
She'll guess it and then be right.
I'm so invested in being like, I'm going to figure this out. But there were so many that I was just like, wait, what just happened? Like,
oh my gosh, thank you. Thank you. I love plot twists. I did not intend for there to be so many until I got into it. Then I just got addicted. And I was just like,
I have the power.
So that was really
fun. And I would say, like, there are, like, the two main big ones at the end that you find out and you're like, wow, that was crazy. And then there are the more subtle ones where it's just like, it's so good. Everyone needs to read it. I'm excited for book two.
And this is not really a spoiler. This is like it's like a tiny, tiny spoiler, but it doesn't have any impact on the plot. But I think my favorite is Riker being the person at the tavern with Aya.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know why, but I really loved that. Like, it was just so fun.
That did get me, yeah.
Writing it, and I was like, oh, I know this person. Like, okay.
That was a good scene. And you're like, oh, shoot.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, no.
Yeah. There are so many good ones. Before we get into, like, the quote personal questions of just, like, you as a person and what you like to do, we wanted to ask if there are, like, any teasers or anything that you can share with us and our listeners for book two, or even, like, if you have secret projects you're working on, like, we'd love to hear about it.
Yes. So I can tell you that book two is longer than Saints. She's thick. I don't know how long she's going to stay, but I was supposed to cut a little bit during my edits, and instead I added 2,000 words, so we'll see. We'll see where that ends up. And there's an epilogue I'm, like, still churning over. I'm, like, wondering if I can, like, sneak in right before we go to copy edits, so we'll see. I will say it's a lot darker than book one. There's a lot of discourse that, as an author, you don't, like, participate in. But there's a lot of discourse between, like, is it adult, is it YA? And everyone's entitled to their opinions. I can tell you, by how it's repped and positioned, it's adult for Curse of Saints. The series itself gets more adult in terms of having not just, like, more sex, but, like, it just gets darker. The themes get darker. I often joke that it's, like, the empire of the series for book two, which is really exciting. It was really fun to write. It's interesting because, like, I don't like took like consume dark media in terms of like, I can't like, I, it took me until last year to watch Game of Thrones just because I was like, oh, gore. But like writing it, I don't know what it is, but I was like, yes, stabbing. Like, this is great. And I'm like, obviously bringing that to therapy, right? Let's unpack that. Anyway, this is way out of hand. What I was going to say is it's definitely darker. It's a little grittier. It's longer. And it plays with the sort of forbidden love trope. So Aya and Will make the decision really early on to keep their relationship secret when they go back home because they both have roles that they have to fill. And that was really fun and opens up a lot of opportunities for growth between the two of them. It was definitely, it was hard for me because I obviously just was like, no, I just want everyone to know about you guys being in love. At the same, you know, they have a mind of their own. But I think it makes a lot of sense for their characters. And I think the thing that I most want people to keep in mind is that similarly to what we were saying earlier about Aya, right, is like she is dealing with the fallout of so much. And Aya and Will have just come together in a very like intense setting in an intense way. And so I think that what was the most fun and the most challenging for me at the same time in writing Sins is that we really get to see their relationship grow, but it's not strictly linear, right? We see them like a real couple have to figure out, okay, well, when we're not locked in a prison cell, you know, thinking we're going to die, what does it look like?
Yeah. That prison cell scene, by the way, I was like, wow, oh my God. This is great. Like, I want to be locked in a prison cell now.
One of the first scenes I ever wrote of the book, actually.
It was a good scene for me.
Deb's like, I volunteer as tribute.
I will get told off by the queen and thrown in a prison cell for Will. I'm honestly surprised, though, that you haven't seen Game of Thrones for so long, because for all of the Game of Thrones fans out there, I feel like the politics and all of the back and forth and like everybody having their own kind of agendas is very Game of Thrones. Like, it's not at that level. Like, it's not, like you said, like bloody or gory or anything like that. But there is that sense of who's doing what and why.
Political deals and secrets and...
It's so embarrassing. I never admit this unless I like... never. It's getting on record now. So when Game of Thrones first came out, I tried to watch it and it was like, it was too much for me. And so I ended up, but it was like a really big deal, right? And everyone was talking about it. So I would read the episode synopsis every week. And so I knew what happened. And then when the last season came out, I just watched the last season and I was like, got it, good. So like I knew enough, but like I wouldn't say it was interesting because I had to sign a bunch of tippins for Fairy Loot and I had to sign them in a very short window. And so there's nothing else to do when you're signing tippins than watch TV because you're signing, like you can't do anything else. And so I binged all, like I went from episode one all the way through because I had a friend who was like, you cannot be an author and not watch this. Like, you have to watch it. But it was so interesting to see. I was like, oh my gosh, so much of fantasy is inspired by Game of Thrones. It's really embarrassing. But yeah, so I didn't watch it when everyone watched it, but I did read it. And so I would just like participate in conversation. Like, you know, when Daenerys comes out of the burning temple and she's on fire, I was like, oh my God, I know, that was crazy.
As someone who watched, I think I got to season two, and then there's an episode where this woman, I think she's a witch, and she gives birth to smoke, and I was like, yeah, I'm out. I can't do this. And I stopped watching it, so I understand.
There's a lot. But going off of, like, the fact that a lot of fantasy is inspired by, like, those core Game of Thrones moments, but since you have said you weren't like that into it when it first came out, what did inspire you?
Yes, Victoria Aveyard, Sebastian Gare. I want to make people hurt the way Sebastian Gare makes me hurt.
Yes. That's how we explain her books to everybody. Like, you're going to be sad and you're going to be hurt, but you're going to love it. Like, you're going to want to
get it. Yeah, and you're going to ask her to do it to you again and again.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm always like, okay, I want people to hurt the way Sabah makes me hurt. I want to trick people the way Victoria Aveyard tricks me. Like, and I want the badassery of Leigh Bardugo, like, all in yeah. there. And just the absolutely amazing prose of Ayanna Gray. Like, that's who I'm, like, channeling at all times. But no, I mean, there are so many great authors that I look up to and aspire to and was reading at that time. Claire Legrand was another one. I love Claire. I have gotten to meet Claire this year and we've become like friends. And I, when I tell you that I almost flipped my shit when I met her in the hotel lobby and I like just managed to keep my cool because she caught me off guard and I didn't know that it was her standing next to me until she introduced herself. And I was like, oh my God. And then I ran upstairs to my room. And
that would be me.
She is fantastic and a fantastic author. I mean, just amazing,
I always talk amazing. About Claire. I always tell people they need to read Fury Born. Like every,
oh,
I like,
so good.
I love her writing and her fantasy books too. Just so amazing and
so good, so good. Mary Pearson is another author that I loved. The Dance of Thieves mm-hmm. duology, I absolutely adored. I loved the like biting humor between those two characters.
Yes, we love Mary too. She's so sweet. She's the nicest.
She's
person.
The cutest. I know.
It's awesome. It's awesome. I mean, I feel like everyone in the community is so fantastic. Like, everyone I've met has been amazing. So, and then in terms of TV, there really wasn't, I wasn't really watching a ton of TV at the time. And if I was, I was watching, like, Schitt's Creek and, like, yeah. you know, The Office and stuff.
Classic.
Yeah, like, I, you know, yeah, so I wasn't, New Girl is something I have on in the background.
Me too. Yes. It's, like, my rewatch constant, like, oh, I need it on background mm-hmm. music or background noise.
Yes, absolutely. Sometimes I'll watch, like, an angsty romance to try to, like, get the, like, you know, angst really channeling in me. But no, I find them, honestly, I'm most inspired either when I'm reading or, like, when I'm out just experiencing the world. Like, I have to, I know a lot of authors feel like if they close themselves in, that's when they have time to really focus. And I'll get into that stage too. Like when I'm editing, like my family knows, like don't contact me that week if I'm on an editing deadline. Like just don't. But while I'm writing and drafting and trying to imagine things, I have learned that if I shut myself away, I just spiral. Like I'm alone and I'm like, oh my God. So I have to kind of be out there and experiencing the world. So like travel tends to help. Like I like to go somewhere and write, even if it's just like to a coffee shop, go see a friend, get out of, you know, my routine.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I feel
yeah.
that.
If you had this two-part question, I guess. So, like, what kind of music do you listen to? And did you have, like, a soundtrack to the book while you were writing it?
On Spotify, there is a Curse of Saints playlist.
I love this.
Yes!
Made by me that I listen to on repeat. The song Saturn by Sleeping at Last, the instrumental version, is the song that Ian will dance to on the beach in Trujillo.
I'm going
to
go back and read that scene. I know. And then go.
Read the opening with that scene. Yeah.
I'm so excited.
I made myself cry on several occasions. There's actually a TikTok that like does it line for line somewhere on, you know.
Yeah, we'll link out to all of this stuff when the episode is live so that way everyone can go and listen to the playlist. And I know the exact scene too where she's like, oh, you requested this? And then it's like the instrument.
Yes!
Like, oh. So that I'm doing that immediately after this.
Love that. Yes, that was a song that was on repeat a lot. I mean, there was so, honestly, so much music that was, it was like, you know, the dark kind of angsty vibes. When Loveless came out with their rendition of Running Up That Hill, like that was on repeat a million times
Loretta's
over.
Loretta's obsessed with
Loveless. Which was really cool.
I love Loveless.
Yeah. Amazing. I did a TikTok about how it was like their rendition was like the new Enemies to Lovers, and it, I blew up and the band reached out, was like, oh my gosh, thanks. And I was like, oh, thank you. Like, oh my God. So obviously they're on the playlist. So there was a bunch of different songs that went into it. And honestly, it's been a while since I've listened, because I listened to it like so much. It was my entire top songs of 2020 and 2021. Like that was just all, it was the Curse of Saints playlist. So I haven't listened to it in a while. I've been on the Sins playlist now, which is a little different. A little darker, a little moodier. And then honestly, I've been listening to the Red, White, and Royal Blue playlist. So,
I'm very excited.
I've been all over
to listen to this playlist and then also for book two playlist.
Me too. Now that I know it exists, I'll be like ready to read it and listen to it at the same time.
It's fun. I love writing to music. It's really hard for me to write in silence. I just, like, my brain can't do it. I need something going on in the background.
Yeah, I feel like I work better when there's something else going on too. Not necessarily reading, but if I'm just like working, I need something to like help me focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Loretta, any other questions on your end? Or can we jump into our little mini game?
I think we're good. I'm good.
Okay. So one of the things we like to do when we interview authors, it's not necessarily a game. I guess it would be more an exercise, just a little fun activity, is talking about all of the different characters and what they would be doing if they lived in the real world. And like,
what are they reading? What are they listening to? Or what do they do? Or,
yeah. So like, we'll start off with Aya. She's the main character. She is a badass. She can persuade people to do things. Like, what do you think that she'd be doing today?
She'd probably be a lawyer.
You know? I can see that.
Or like, much to her chagrin, she'd be in politics. Like,
reluctantly.
Right, yeah, very reluctantly. Like, on city council or something. Or like a security guard. She'd probably also do that.
I was just going to say, what could she do that required her to fight and kick ass?
Yeah, like special ops or something.
If I go in the new girl route, I can totally see her as Lizzie Kaplan's character, the lawyer that Nick dates.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We just watched that episode yesterday.
Like, I feel like that.
You don't like dessert, and I genuinely don't understand it.
Yes. And like, when you're like punching the bus driver, or punching the guy and like crashing the bus.
Yes.
I would just... Yeah, so she'd be a new girl. Her hobbies, I mean, I feel like she would, like, be a frequent person at axe throwing. You know, like, she'd be, like, really good.
I was
going to
say she does martial arts.
Oh, yeah, kickboxing. For sure she does martial arts. You know, she, like, goes axe throwing but by herself because she doesn't like people. So I think that would be, like, a big thing that she would do. She'd be really into outdoorsy things as well. She'd probably go hiking a lot. She would die in this Atlanta heat, that's for sure. So that would definitely be our girl, Aya.
See, I feel like her and I would be friends. Be like, let's go together because I don't like people either.
Yeah. We'll go and talk to the wolves together.
You'll talk to the wolves. Yeah, I mean, she could like work for one of the wolf sanctuaries.
There you go.
Probably what she would do.
Yes. Okay, what about Will? I feel like he'd be, in an emo boy band.
I think he's definitely, you know what, so I keep going back and forth. I'm like, is Will, like, I was like, maybe he's listening to, like, emo. And then I was like, actually, like, he's probably sitting there listening to, like, classical music and, like, deconstructing it in his mind and, like, you know, just getting lost in the rhythm. Ball.
Getting all broody over it.
Yeah, like, getting broody, like, staring out at the rain, you know, coming back from, like, some, like, high-powered corporate job that he hates and loathes but does anyway. Like, that's definitely, you know, the man with many layers. He's like a tortured soul. And then his coworkers see him on the weekend in like a black t-shirt and jeans, and they're like, what the heck? That's Will. Like, that's Will. Yeah, so, yeah.
This all checks out.
And then they see him at Starbucks and his drink order is like a mango dragon fruit instead of like a black coffee.
Yes. And they're like, what the hell? He's sitting there like reading his, he loves, so Will canonically loves historical fiction. So he would just be sitting there like reading his historical fiction and people would be like, bro.
And then Aya would walk in and see him sitting there and just be disgusted and just be like,
Yes, you represent everything I hate.
Get out of here.
Definitely, that is very cute. I could write a modern rom-com about this. Oh my
God. She comes in with like her hiking backpack and he's there with like his briefcase.
He's like, yes. Honestly, they're probably like rival lawyers. Like Will's doing corporate law. Like Aya's, you know, they're like abandoning off in the courtroom. Oh my God, this story writes itself.
I would honestly read this. Like, they're thrown into the modern world and I'm just like, I'm here for it. I'll reread their whole love story again.
Yes.
Aiden is next. He's so fun.
Aiden, I feel like Aiden would either be like running a nonprofit or would just be doing like professional philanthropy across the board.
Because I was just going to say, I could see him being like a cool politician, like one who actually cares and like interacts with people.
Like one I would actually vote for.
Yeah.
I definitely think like he would either be like in politics in some way or like working on some sort of grassroots movement of some sort, something to make the world better. And he'd be a leader wherever he is because he's a great leader. So he would be doing that. He would be listening to pop music.
I was just going to say, he's listening to like Five Sauce or I don't know.
Yes. Everything. I mean, the new Olivia Rodrigo song, like he's there always, that's a banger. Like, definitely Aiden's jam. And it's only because like Josie made him listen to it. And now he's like in his room singing it himself.
Yeah.
That's definitely Aiden. He's definitely out there in some like intramural sports thing for sure. Like, I just feel like he like loves teamwork and that would be his thing. You know, and I also feel like he like runs the neighborhood patrol. Like, kind of like the neighborhood watch.
I could see that too.
You know, like has like a sign on his house.
Yeah.
Like,
he's the one who leaves out like the doggy poop bags for everybody that like is walking
their
dog.
These are king-sized free candy bars on Halloween only. Like Aiden is the house to go to on Halloween. He's organizing the block parties.
There's a free like, little library in front so you can go.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Aiden. This is 100% Aiden. You know, and on the weekends, he's checking in on his fam because he's family oriented.
He's like, contact me anytime. And he actually means it. And you're like,
whoa. Yeah. Anything. And he truly means it. Yes.
And Josie, because she's on next, would live like across the street from him. And they just like go over each other's houses every day.
Yes.
She rolls her 100%. Eyes at him all the time.
100%. They would definitely like all live in the same neighborhood. And we don't get to see them a lot. I think they're only mentioned by name and Saints, but they have roles in Sins. Their best friends, Clyde and Lucas, they would be living down the street from them as well. They would just like have the whole neighborhood. I mean, they would be the life of the party, which would be amazing. Josie, I feel like Josie could maybe be like a professional MMA fighter. I was thinking that too. You know, it's hard because Josie, like, if we're sticking in canon, like, Josie does not what she wants, but what she's expected to do. So, like, she would probably take the path that her parents told her, and then hopefully break free from that and go do what she wants. But I could see her doing something like being an MMA fighter. Honestly, like, maybe even being, like, a motocross
racer.
That
would be really cool. Ooh,
yeah. Cool. That would be cool.
And then she goes in disguise to, like, the local art museum to, like, go check out all of the art.
Yeah.
Yes. That I could see her being like a top tier influencer, honestly.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
And then I think her hobbies would be, obviously she would paint. She would still paint. She would definitely annoy Aiden lovingly for sure. And then I think she'd probably find a way to force her friendship on Aya somehow. And, you know, like, make that happen. Josie is like also like watching reruns of New Girl for sure. Like, she's like classic TV. Absolutely.
She's like the friend on the group chat that's just constantly sending TikToks and memes. They're like, this is so funny.
Yes. And like also like starting the day on Monday with like, happy Monday. Here's a dog picture. Like, that's Josie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, and lastly, Tova. I love her. I wish there was more of her in book one, but I'm excited to see her in book two and like see what happens. But from what we do get of her, I feel like she is really awesome and I would want to know like more about her.
She is. So Tova is the life of the party. So much like Aiden, Tova would be doing something in leadership. I actually do think Tova would probably be a professional influencer. She would definitely do it. Like, she would love to be like a fashion influencer. She would be someone that people just like follow just because she's cool and because she's, you know, enigmatic and attracts people. So that's probably what she'd be doing professionally, just being a famous person, which would be really cool. Which means her hobbies would be like going to really high class events and like dragging Aya along with her. And like, absolutely not. But also like Tova loves to hike. She loves to read romance novels. Like, she'd lead the romance book club. For sure. Like, that would be her thing. She'd probably volunteer at the bookstore or library and, like, get that
She's
going.
Stealing all the books out of Aiden's little free library.
Yes! Or, like, replacing them with, like, really raunchy things. He's like, I
He puts in, like, the family-friendly stuff, and then she, like, sneaks them out and steals them and then puts in, like, all of the romance.
50 Shades of Grey in there. And yeah. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah, that's definitely Tova. And she gets Aya, like, that's the one thing Aya goes along with without question. She's like, yes, that's absolutely F with the library.
And then, like, and then they'll prank him and hide the romance books with, like, different covers. And they'll be like, we got you something. And he starts reading it. And he's like, what is this? Like, what?
Yes. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. That'd be funny.
Thinking. I have this headcanon event that, so Will is afraid of spiders. Like, that's his thing. Like, he does not like them. It's, like, a really weird random fact.
I love this.
And so I have this, like, really, like, clear in my head headcanon of Aya and Will just screwing with him and, like, pretending there's a spider on him one day when they're, like, out walking through the woods and him just freaking the hell out.
Oh, my God. It's like those TikTok videos of people freaking out and their partner's like, what's happening? And there's nothing there.
Yes. I mean, if fake spiders existed in their realm, they would definitely use a fake spider, but I'm pretty sure Aya just, like, throws a twig on him and is like, oh, my God. I love the idea of them just completely making his life miserable over spiders.
I need, like, an actual scene where they're, like, trekking through or, like, they're underground and everything's fine. And then you're like, and then Will starts
to scream.
She's like,
is that a spider? Yeah.
And then you find that. And then they're, like, freaking out because they think he's been, like, stabbed or something. And he's like, there's a spider.
There's a spider, sorry. Yes. Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. I have so many, like, random things like that are half written that are just like if anyone asked me for like a Hallmark movie type sequel at the end of all of this, I would be able to provide it and just like, here's 800 pages of fluff between these friends.
Yes,
I would read. Enjoy.
I would read it.
I love that.
Loretta and I are always joking that we're gonna petition to like Hulu or whatever to like adapt rights for all of our favorite fantasies. So like we'll just do that and convince them to add the fluff episodes in.
Yes. A bonus season of Just Happily Ever After.
Yeah. The special Christmas episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God, like fan fiction. We can do the AU where they're all lawyers. Yeah. Great.
Yes.
Yeah, it's an episode where they're, like, in the real world, and then the end, they wake up, and they realize it was just a dream, and they're like, that was weird. I don't even know that this what this job is.
Yeah, exactly.
What's a lawyer?
Oh, my gosh. I always think, like, Aya would, like, I would die in Aya's world for sure. Like, someone asked me on a panel recently, like, what role would I have? And I was like, I think I'd be a sheep farmer just because it sounds like the same.
Yeah.
Like, in the fields. Like, I don't want to hang out. Like, you know, someone was like, oh, I'd be a bartender. And I was like, I mean, maybe, but, like, Aya attacks one of those immediately. So, like, I'm not safe.
No one is safe.
No one's safe. But I also think that she would die in our world. And I specifically think it'd be, like, death by, like, cell phone. Like, she would figure out that she can't remove herself from the group chat. And she would just be like, I'm out. Like,
I can't do this.
Like, she'd just, like, become a recluse and just, like, shut her doors and all of the curtains. Be like, I'm not home.
Yes.
She's into the wild again.
Who, like, has, like, an old school Nokia because they don't want to be bothered.
She's like, no. They can't track me with this.
Yes.
She's the only person in 2024 with a flip phone.
Yes. And Aiden still has his sidekick because he thinks it's ironically cool.
That checks out.
And then he'd have Josie, like, do a whole photo shoot with him with his sidekick because he thinks it's cool. Like, me and my sidekick.
Yes, like a throwback.
Will has a phone that's not even out yet. It's, like, super high-tech, and he hates it. He's like, this phone.
Because it has, like, upgraded security, man.
I would read all of this. I need it.
I would, too.
This is probably the most fun, like, group of questions I've ever been asked. So thank you. This is
fantastic. We're glad we can provide. These are the things that Loretta and I think about constantly, where we're like, imagine if they were real. Like, bump into them at the Starbucks.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that'd be amazing.
But anyway, we had so much fun talking with you. Everybody read The Curse of Stains by Kate Dramas. Book one is out now. I'm not sure if we've seen when book two is out, but book two is in the works.
It'll be out June of 2024.
All right, June 2024, book two, so you have some time to prep. We will link out to all of Kate's social and all of her Spotify playlists and her website and the book, so you can see all of that good stuff. I think you're just at Kate Dramas across everything. So pretty easy.
Everywhere. Yep.
And yeah, we had so much fun talking with you. We usually let everybody know who's listening. We usually wish them a great day, and may their day be blessed with main character energy.
Main character energy.
May your day be blessed with main character energy.
Thank you.
But yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yay.